considered it an honor, and they discussed to be here, especially since it has a connection to Hapshiva. I had a chance, thank you, Rabbi Greenspan, to see a very moving video about the organization, its work, and read the material. And have a vibe that this idea should catch on to other communities, because the problem that you are dealing with is not isolated to Ramat Beit-Shemesh. Some people think it's isolated to Moshav Ramat Yoav, but in any case, it is not. It's a worldwide issue and needs to be addressed properly. And from what I've seen, you've made a very, very significant start in addressing the issue here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and again, it should have much more on other communities. I really feel that it's necessary for me to give a little bit of a hakdama before I start, especially since my son Yossi is here. He will let me know after I finish if I don't say this. The topic has a connection both to Shalom Bayis and how it impacts on Chinuch. Now, I don't know, you know, Balei Musar used to only speak about things that they could say that they mastered. Now, I don't know how much of an expert I can be on Shalom Bayis, since my wife very rarely sees me. And it's very easy to have great Shalom Bayis when you don't have too much to do with each other. So I'm here tonight, not home. And Chinuch, tell you two stories. My wife was once addressing one of my sons. He must have been 5 or 6 years old. Not Yossi or David. He lives somewhere else now. And my son looked up at my wife and said, "Mommy, how come mommies do so much for their children and tatties don't?" And my wife, being a very good wife, said, "That's not true. Your tatty does plenty for you." And he thinks a little while and he said, "Yeah, tatty once tied my shoes." The second story. I was once rushing out to a shir in the Tanya from my home, and I was running late, and if I didn't leave then, I would definitely be late. And my daughter, who was probably about 12 years old at the time, said, "Tati, I need help with my homework." I said, "Poey, I'm in a rush. I've got to get to a shir in the Tanya." She said, "Okay." She said, "You know, after 120 years, what they're going to say? He was such a great speaker, but look at his kids." I stayed home and did the homework with her and explained to the Tanya why I was late. You get the message, I think. I don't know what kind of expert I am on Shalom Bayis or on Chinuch, since I'm at Beit Shemesh speaking and not home. I do have a fond relationship with my grandchildren, so maybe that qualifies. In any case, I'll tell you what I've heard, and I'll tell you what I really can do for you concerning this topic. When I was a rabbi in Miami, I used to give my drashas on Shabbos morning. One Sunday morning, one of my balabatim said to me, "Rabbi, you should know I didn't sleep almost on Shabbos because of your drasha." I said, "I'm really glad that made such an impression on you that didn't let you sleep all night." He said, "Not exactly, just whenever I'm sleep during the daytime, I have a hard time sleeping at night." I learned from that a very important lesson, that I have the power to put people to sleep when I sleep. Part of Shalom Bayis is predicated on people being calm, rested, and not tense and stressed out. So maybe that's what I was invited to do tonight, give you a nice rest, men and women, so when you go home, you'll be nicer to each other because you're not stressed out. You had a good whatever time of sleep during this. If you are hardcore insomniacs, you may have to hear some different talk. The topic is healthy family relationship, shalom bayis, and how it impacts on chinuch. If you want to have healthy, well-rounded children, then if they grow up in a good home, then that usually is a very positive factor. It's not a guarantee. Yishmael grew up in a very good home. Esav grew up in a very good home. Plenty of shalom bayis, and he was Esav, and he was Yishmael. So it's no guarantee, but it definitely is a positive factor in raising children properly if they see a good relationship between their father and their mother. Let me explain to you why that is the case. First of all, what is a family? Mishpacha. Some say that the word mishpacha comes from the root nispach, sapachas. Nispach means an attachment. And families teach attachments. It teaches each member of the family has a different role to play. And the family is a miniature society. And in the family, you learn how to exert authority. If you're an authority figure, you're a parent. You learn how to accept authority if you're a child. You learn how to get along with siblings, people who are equal to you, and all the various relationships that exist in the larger world, in the larger society, in a micro way exist in the family. So the family teaches you attachments. And if a child sees a healthy relationship between his mother and his father, and they in turn are able to show a child how the various relationships within the family can function properly, then when he's ready to function in the larger world and go out into society, he has a good training from his micro-society called the family. That's one reason why it's like that. And that is really what shalom bayis is. Many people think that shalom bayis is a home where nobody ever raises their voice. There's never any arguments. Everything is peaceful and serene. That does not describe shalom bayis. That describes a cemetery. Shalom bayis can be where people argue, even vociferously, and raise their voices. And you know that the first description is not your home. But you think that perhaps maybe the neighbor's home is like that. But that's only in the winter when the windows are closed. But in the summer when the windows are open, you know it's not your neighbor either. So people can be arguing and they can be yelling at each other, and there's still going to be shalom bayis. Shalom bayis is shlemus habayis. Perfection is not achievable in this world by any individual thing. Perfection is a team effort. Many things working together harmoniously, that's how perfection is achieved in this world. Shalom bayis means perfection of the home, and that is achieved when everybody does their role. They know what their responsibilities are, they know what their benefits are, and they know how to interact, children with parents with children with each other. That's what real shalom bayis is. And therefore, when there is a healthy shalom bayis, then there's a healthy child who will be able to function in the larger society also. But the child sees a dysfunctional small society, that basically is going to be dysfunctional in the larger society too. Second idea is, the Torah gives us a prohibition of hosachmot. Don't be jealous. Don't covet somebody else's things. And the Torah describes what you shouldn't covet. Hosachmot. Eishes reyecha, v'shoro, v'chamoro, v'chol asher reyecha. Don't want your neighbor's wife, or his donkey, or his ox, or anything else. It always bothered me. The Torah is describing an emotion, not to want something. How could the Torah group together wanting your neighbor's donkey and wanting your neighbor's wife? On the surface, they don't seem to be the same emotions, unless there is something very wrong about the wife, or very right about the donkey, or very sick about the guy. So how could the Torah describe the same verb to wanting your neighbor's donkey and wanting your neighbor's wife? The Aseres HaDibros are built that the first five have to do with more spiritual things, and the second five more than Adam Lechaveiro, more physical things. And the first of the first five corresponds to the first of the second five, and so on. Four of them are easy to understand. Belief in God, don't murder, because man is created in God's image. When you murder somebody, you are decreasing God's image in the world. If you don't believe in God, you're decreasing his image spiritually. Here, you're decreasing his image physically. Don't serve idolatry, don't commit adultery. Idolatry is spiritual adultery. Just like a woman goes after a man who's not her husband, Klal Yisrael goes after a person, goes after a God who's not his, strange God, the same thing. This is in the spiritual realm, this is in the physical realm. Don't take God's name in vain, don't steal. Usually the way that a person hides his stealing is by swearing falsely. So this is the spiritual sin and this is the physical sin. Keep Shabbos, don't bear false witness. Shabbos is a testimony that the Rebbe Shem created the world, and if you're not Shomer Shabbos, you're giving false testimony, and this is false testimony in the physical realm. They pick perfectly, except for the last one. Kaveda Sovirga Vesimecha, honor your parents, lo sachmo. Don't copy. What does honoring the parent have to do with Losach? The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Rekev Atzomos Kina. Kina rots your bones. And you can understand that literally, but the Gemara says it has a deeper meaning. And the deeper meaning is that what you want, you won't get. It rots your essence. What you want, you won't get. You can't get what you are jealous of other people. And what you have, you lose. And it's not a punishment, it's just a natural result of what jealousy is. Jealousy means I'm not happy being me, and I want to be somebody else. And therefore it makes no difference what I want of that person. The main thing is I want to be him. And therefore, if I want his wife for other reasons than this, that's a separate issue, that really arises. It's a separate prohibition. If I want his donkey because it's strong, there could be nothing wrong with that. But if the basis is I'm not happy being me and I want to be him, and in order to be him, I want his wife, I want his donkey, I want everything, because I want to be him and I don't feel being me is important, then you destroy and rot your essence, atzmos, atzmios. Your essence is rotted by jealousy. And therefore, what you want, you can't get because you can't be somebody else. And what you have will atrophy, and you'll lose it because you won't realize your qualities and your abilities and your capabilities and your talents. You're only looking at what somebody else has. And therefore, you lose what you have. A person who's not happy being himself can't possibly honor his parents because they made you who you are. And if you're unhappy with who you are, and you can't be happy with your parents. That's the greatest affront to a parent. The opposite is also true. The more a child respects his parents, and respect means I consider them important, says the Chayyot. That's what respect, kavod, comes from the word kavod, heavy. In the 60s in America, the slang was that a heavy thing did not mean that you had to go to a diet place. A heavy thing meant something important. Something serious, a heavy idea, a heavy person. Today it has other connotations. But then it meant that. And that's what it means. I have to consider my parents heavies. They're important. I appreciate who they are, and if I appreciate who they are, I can appreciate who I am, because they made me who I am. And in order for a person to really identify who he is, he has to really respect his parents. And therefore, Kibbutz Avraham and Losachmo go together. if you want to really honor your parents, then you can't be a person who's not happy being himself. And if you want to be happy being yourself, then honoring your parents and the parents giving the children what to honor is very, very important. Please, I don't mind the baby, not at all. The Gemara says that the world exists on the babbling of little children. I have yet to find a Gemara that says the world exists on my babbling. So I wouldn't want to compete. And after 120 years, the Rebbe Shlomo is going to say to me, why did you take precedence over that baby? As long as it's not in my home at night, it's fine. Another reason, so therefore, a good, healthy relationship that a child sees between his parents fosters good chinuch, because it makes the child feel good about himself. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that the foundation of all avodas Hashem, you want to make sure that your children don't go off the derech. I'll tell you a scoop. Okay? This scoop is real, a real scoop. A real scoop is, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that the foundation of avodas Hashem is that a person should recognize its own self-worth, have self-esteem. Because if you think you are worthless, if you think that you are good for nothing, then what would give you the incentive to do things that are not good for nothing, if that's what you want? And what would give you the incentive to want to serve the Rebbe Shlomo? If you could think you're a nothing, why would God want a nothing to serve? It's only if you recognize how important you are. Where you come from. We come from Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. We're important people. And it's important to the Rebbe Shlomo that we serve him. And it's inappropriate for us to do things that are inappropriate for such important people. If that message gets across to our children and they feel good about themselves and they feel self-esteem, and that's not gaiva. The difference between gaiva, haughtiness, and self-esteem is in one sentence. Gaiva is, I'm important because I made myself important and that gives me rights. That's gaiva. That's awesome. Self-esteem is, I'm important because God made me important and that gives me responsibility. That's self-esteem. Worlds apart, same feeling. And if the children can look to parents and feel proud that these are my parents, not be ashamed of them, and see that they, I'm happy being me because my parents made me me and I identify through my parents, then you have the beginning, at least, the foundation of what an Obed Hashem is, what somebody who's on the Derech Hashem is and not off the Derech. Another reason why a healthy Shalom Bayis relationship impacts on Chinuch is what the Gemara says by his Ben Sorum Mor. Ben Sorum Mor is the ultimate child who is the antithesis of good chinuch. Child who is a glutton and a drunkard and a rebel and a thief and accepts absolutely no authority. The Gemara says that you have to execute such a child. Under certain conditions, the Gemara says that the conditions were never happen. This is according to one thing. One of the conditions is that the parents almost be identical in height and that their voice be the same. That either means that the father has a feminine voice or the mother has a masculine voice. But they have to speak with one voice. And the Bali Musar say what it means is that if the parents can't get along and they can't give that child one common message, they don't speak with one voice, and the child doesn't see the two parents as one being, and that's what Shalom Bayis is. Chazon Ish says, Shalom Bayis is where the relationship between a husband and wife is like a right hand and a left hand. And the one person, the Ari Levine Zatzal, once went with his wife to the doctor. She was having some pains in her leg, and they wanted to investigate what the problem was. The doctor came out to the waiting room, and he turned to the Ari and he said, Ari, what's the problem? He said, my wife's leg hurts us. That's Shalom Bayis, where two parents feel that they're one. And if that's what a child sees, then he can accept the message that those parents give. But if he sees that the message is split, the mother speaks with one voice and the father speaks with a different voice, and they can't get together on anything, then the child, the impact on the child will be that the chinuch, you can't blame the child for being a ben soro mori, you have to blame the parents. It's not his fault, but you expect it. You know what Baba Batin say? Baba Batin say, until Rashi and Tosfos can agree on tefillin, I'm not putting on tefillin. And that's what children say. Until my parents can get it together and agree, I don't listen to anybody. Because I really don't want to choose, you know, and favor one over the other. So to be very machmer in Kibbud Av V'Em, I'll listen to no one. And if they don't say it openly, they say it subconsciously. So another reason why a healthy Shalom Bayis situation impacts on chinuch is for this reason. A child needs to see parents who are able to work together and to deliver the same message to that child. And if the parents don't agree, they should argue in private until they do. And then the message the child should get is a unified message. Another reason is, in order to have real Shalom Bayis, people have to work on their egos. There's only two possible ways that people can get along together, husband and wife. Either they can work on their egos, and then it's possible that two people living under the same roof in the conditions that Shalom Bayis demands can possibly treat each other properly. Or the only other possibility, I think, is if both of them are in comas. Then it's also possible they should be able to relate to each other without any friction, without any problem. But if they are awake and functioning, then you have to work on your egos. You have to have good egos. If you don't have good egos, you can't function with anybody, surely with somebody who you see all the time and you interact with all the time. And therefore, the foundation of chinuch is egos. Egos comes. Unfortunately, our schools, I don't know if they understand that. Many places think that the foundation of chinuch is how many black gemara you know, or how many psukim you know in Tanakh. But ikur of Torah is not knowledge. That can only come after you have midos tovos. How do I know that? Because God said so. Because that's why we were chosen. That's why Avraham Avinu was chosen. And that's why we were chosen to get the Torah, not because God knew we could learn the most. We can understand the most. We're the smartest. Not the reason. The reason is he adopted, because God said, I know Avraham Avinu intimately. L'mana she yitzadeh es bono v'tmei beso achrov lishmor derech Hashem. He will instruct his children to observe the way of God. What is the way of God, says the Rambam, very clearly. In Hilchos Deis, derech Hashem means mitos tovos. Emulating God's character traits. That is the reason why Avraham Avinu was chosen. Because without mitos, it ain't derech eretz, ain't Torah. Says the Rabbeinu Yonah, Lo yishko ha-Torah la'olam, the mishain bo midos tovos. The Torah will never exist, or can never forever exist, in someone who doesn't have midos tovos. So if you want to impact on education, and impart a Torah way to children, then the Torah says what the way is. You have to start with Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz, Kodmo the Torah. That's Derech Eitz HaChayim, is Derech Eretz. That's the way to get to the Eitz HaChayim. And if you want the knowledge of Torah to inspire a child and guide a child that he's accepted, then he has to have midos tovos. And if he sees parents who have no midos because they're constantly bickering and their lack of midos causes a horror in the home, then what do you expect that child to respect midos tovos and want to have them for himself? The parents that are a good example, a personal example of midos tovos, and that impacts on Shalom Bayis, therefore impacts on chinuch. Don't make any mistake to think that all of this is easy. And if anybody here came tonight to hear some kind of skula, panacea, easy idea, just do this and you will have Shalom Bayis, go home. Because there are no easy solutions. And Henry Kissinger, who I don't usually quote, but he said something very true. He said, usually there are very simple solutions to the most complex issues, and they're usually wrong. There are no simple solutions to anything. Everything in this world is complex. Nothing is black and white. There are various shades of gray and all different colors. And people who would like to see this world in black and white are basically living in a fantasy world. So every issue is complex, and every issue needs a complex solution. In addition, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, there are no general rules in Torah, and even that's not a general rule. There's only specifics, and every situation is different. And I am terrified by a lot of these books that are written on chinuch and written on shalom bayis, and they tell you step by step how to have shalom bayis. Just do this, do that. Person walks around the whole book all day. Oh, you said that? What am I supposed to say? Get up. Oh, I'm supposed to say this. Okay. Right. How am I supposed to? Let me tell you what those books are worth. Okay, I don't care who goes. If your child is too short to reach the table, put him under it. That is a very good aid. Beyond that, a book that purports to let everybody know what to do in every situation for every person has to be a lot. Because people are different and situations are different, and nothing is good for everyone. And nothing applies to every situation. So I didn't come here tonight to tell you this is what all of you should do and you'll all have shalom bayis. That's absurd. And if that's what you're looking for, it's not going to happen. But unfortunately today, that's what people want. And therefore these books sell like hotcakes. Because you want to fool yourself into thinking there's an easy way. Now I saw that the Israeli orange growers have developed a new strain of orange that's going to be on the market this coming year. They invested millions of dollars in genetically making a new orange. And they asked them what was wrong with the old orange that they had to invest millions to make a new orange. They said, we'll tell you. The new orange has a very thin skin, it's very easy to peel, and it has no pits. And we have to please our clientele. And today people want it fast and easy. And if it's not fast and easy, they don't want it. So the old orange wasn't so fast and it wasn't so easy. So we have to produce a fast and easy orange. When it comes to oranges, that may be very nice and possible. When it comes to shalom bayis, when it comes to chinuch, it doesn't exist. And it never will exist. Because the purpose of this world is to face issues and to struggle. And that's what we're called Yisrael. This week's Seder, Kisarisa and Elohim v'mamashim v'atuchal, because we know how to struggle. And we know how to put in effort and commitment. And today, that's what's missing. People are not committed. In order to have shalom bayis, you have to work on it. It doesn't come by itself. And because people don't understand that, we have, unfortunately, youngsters who get married, and they think that they're going to have problemless marriages. Because problems are not for this world. And if they have the first problem, then she runs home to her mother, or this one runs home to who knows what, or Stam runs away, because we have a problematic marriage, and therefore it's not going to work. Everybody has a problematic marriage. Everybody has problems. Everybody has issues they have to face. That's what this world is all about. The thing is not to seek problemless situations, but to know how to overcome those problems and deal with them and solve them. Somebody once told me today they stopped giving out marriage licenses. They give out learner's permits. I'll try it out. That's why they have the prenuptial agreements. Right before you get married, already you decide how you're splitting up your property when you get divorced. Because it's probably not going to work out, and if we have to really put in any effort, forget about it. So we'll try it, but if not, let's get the divorce proceedings already set before we get married. So you're here, obviously you're willing to spend the Motzei Shabbos listening to me, so you know how to deal with problems and how to deal with issues that need to be dealt with. So understand that that's what shalom bayis is. You know, my wife stands Friday night, beautiful smile on her face. it's not really true because you need the kitchen, but in any case, and when we sing Eish Yisrael, and Eish Yisrael, so if I was a woman, I would be very much offended by what it says there. Because what Shlomo HaMelech says is, Eish Yisrael Yimtzo, who can find a woman of valor? Women of valor are very rare amongst Jewish people. I don't know why that is a phrase of Jewish women, right? And Shlomo HaMelech himself contradicts that. Later on he says, Rabos Bonos Asukhail, many women became the Sheikhat. There's so many of them, why are they hard to find? They're hiding behind trees. Why exactly are they hard to find if there's many of them? So my Machutin once told me, after he heard this question from me, he said, the father, he said, Rabos Bonos Asukhail, many unmarried girls could be Benoschai. Aishas Chayil Miyimsa, what she's married, forget about it. That is not the shot. What is the shot? I'll tell you what I think. What I think is, Aishas Chayil Miyimsa, you can't just find an Aishas Chayil, they don't grow on trees. They're not like pearls, that if you're lucky, you find an oyster with a pearl, and if you not lucky, you find an oyster without a pearl. This happens to be your luck, if you get the right oyster or not. Agav, in parentheses, I once saw how are pearls formed. Oysters, sometimes grains of sand permeate their shells, and they wreak havoc with the oyster. It itches the oyster, and it irritates the oyster, and it causes the oyster to secrete a liquid called mother of pearl, which surrounds that grain of sand and isolates it and takes away the irritation. And that develops into a pearl. Only oysters that had problems, that were irritated, produced pearls. Oysters that never had any problems don't produce anything. So like we said, this world is a world we have to deal with problems, but dealing with those problems produce pearls. Eish Yisrael means you're not going to find an Eish Yisrael. They don't just happen. But Rabos Bonos Asukhai, many women made themselves Neshechai. A lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Plenty of Jewish women who made themselves Neshechai, but nothing just happens by itself. No woman is just found to be an Eish Yisrael just like this. It takes work. The same thing goes for men. The same thing goes for a good marriage, and every situation in life, there are problems. And the purpose of life is to face those problems and to deal with them in the best way possible, according to the way the Torah wants us to deal with them. And that's why the halacha is that when you go to battle, you can't put a siege around an enemy from all four sides. You have to leave one side open where the enemy can escape. Now, there's an argument who that applies to. According to some, it applies to those enemies that we're allowed to have mercy on. So it's a merciful thing. Don't put the enemy in a situation where they are totally boxed in. Give them away, run away. They run away, and you're okay. But the Rambam holds that halacha applies also to Shiva So'ami, to the seven nations of Canaan. We're not allowed to run away. We have a mitzvah to kill them, men, women, and children, to annihilate them. And still, the mitzvah is, don't surround them from all four sides, leave one side open. So why? We're not supposed to let them have a way of escaping. We're not allowed to let them escape. So they explain, it's not mercy. It's the opposite. It's good strategy. If the enemy knows he has no way out to run away, he fights with all his might till the death. And then you're fighting an enemy who's very hard to fight. But if the enemy knows there's an easy way out, he doesn't put all his strength in because he knows he has the option to run away, then you're fighting an enemy who's not totally committed, you can overpower him. That's the strategy. When people have an easy way out, if my job doesn't work out, find another job. My marriage doesn't work out, find another marriage. My children don't work out, find other children. That option really doesn't apply. You're always looking for the path of least resistance, then you'll never put the commitment in to make it work. When you know that it's not easy to run away and you have to make it work, that's not that there are times when it's just impossible and you have to say, not running away, but this is the solution, change the situation. Even divorce is a mitzvah sometimes. But if you do that as the first avenue, it's easy to run, then you'll never put the effort in to make it work. And you'll always be running. So, if you came tonight to find easy solutions and easy ideas and shalom bayit, this is not the place to get it. I can give you the number of the orange growers, maybe they have. So what is a shalom bayit potential? Let me read you around on it, and then we'll discuss some basic ideas, which again, are general ideas that don't apply for every situation the same way, but they're general ideas that you then have to know how to apply in your specific situation and how to apply them, because they change for each person. But the basic ideas are positive ideas that need to be accommodated and acclimated to everybody's specific situations throughout life. Let me tell you how the Rambam describes shalom bayit, what the ideal relationship between a husband and wife is. Let me, before I start this, warn you. The Rambam has two halachas here. One, how men should treat their wives, and one, how wives should treat their husbands. I found that whenever I speak to women, they tune out the Rambam of how women should treat their husbands and only listen to the one how husbands treat their wives. When I speak to men, it's the opposite. So what I usually cause is tremendous shalom bayit problems. Because the women go home and say to the husband, hey, I heard tonight the Rambam says you have to do this and this and this and this. How come you don't? And the husband says, yeah, but I heard the Rambam says you have to do this and this and this. So I would ask that those on this side of the Mechitza listen to the Rambam that says how a woman should treat her husband, and those on this side of the Mechitza should listen to how a man should treat his wife. And if you want to eavesdrop a little bit, fine, but that's not the anchor. You know, Meir Shapiro's on something. Rublinarov said, it says in Tehillim, Ki im besoras Hashem hefzo, besoroso yehe geyomun v'layim. Person should busy himself with his Torah day and night. What do you mean, his Torah? He says in every relationship there are two Torahs. For instance, there is a lender and a borrower. So the borrower is his Torah. He has to make sure that he pays back on time, and he scrimps and saves to be able to do that, and he has to be thankful to the one who gave him the loan. And the lender has to not pressure the borrower, he knows he doesn't have the money, and he has to not take interest from him, and so on. When everybody keeps their Torah, the lender is saying, I'm not going to pressure you, and I'm not going to take interest from you. And the borrower is saying, I better scrimp and save and pay back on time. Shalom on Israel. You know what this problem is? When the lender is saying, you better scrimp and save and pay me back on time, and the other one says, you better not pressure me, and everybody knows the other one's Torah, then there's a problem. When husbands know what their responsibilities are, and wives know what their responsibilities are, and everybody tries to keep what they're supposed to do, then the shalom bayit. And everybody's looking to see what the other one's power is, what they're supposed to do, then there is the opposite of shalom bayit. So let me read these to you. The chayt shibu chachavim ye'odem mechavet is isto yosef yigupo. A man has to respect and honor his wife more than his own, than he respects and honors himself. The ohavot yigupo is a lover like he loves himself. The yesh lo mamon marvet etovot zekvim amonon. He has the means, he should provide for his wife according to his means, money-wise, monetarily, and make sure that she lives a standard of living which is nice, if he can afford it. The lo yakil oleha ema yisera, he should not intimidate her, make her fearful of him. The yakiburo ima benaka, she should speak calmly to her. The lo yakotse, he shouldn't be depressed. The low rocks on and not an agitated person constantly. That is in order to make a wife feel comfortable. If the husband's always depressed or he's always agitated, it's not good for the atmosphere, the spirit of the home. Now let's see the other way. The Chayt Sivu Al-Aisha. Shetiyah Mechapegas is Bible B'yosur Yidari. A woman should respect and honor her husband more than a month. No. That's more than enough. How much is enough and how much more? We'll discuss all of this. V'yeh Aleha Mora Minen. She should fear him. Not fear him and be afraid. She should have stand in awe of her husband. V'tasa Kol Maseha Al-Pi. She should do what he wants. V'yeh Be'neha Kol Mosaro Nela. She should look up to him like a prince or a king. Ma'alekas v'taivas lipo, u'martekas kol ma'chi yisna. And she should do whatever she knows her husband likes and stay away from the things that he doesn't like. The zit derech benos yisrael b'nisar atojim atahorim zibuka. This is the way that Jewish women and Jewish men act in their marriages. V'drachan eli yeshuva no'en meshuva. This is the way you have shalom bayit. Now let's discuss what it is and then discuss a few more general things, and if you work on those things, then mitzvah, you have a chance to achieve what shalom bayis is. First thing, a husband has to honor, respect his wife more than himself. What does that mean? We mentioned before that covet is not so much what you do. The Gemara says, when it comes to kibbutz avim, that a person can feed his father and mother pheasant every day and get gehenna for it. And he can force them to work in a mill and get gehenna. And the Gemara gives the example. There was a son who fed his father pheasant every single day. Very expensive fowl. And one day, the father said to him, where are you getting all this expensive poultry? And the son said to his father, eat, old man, and don't ask me questions. Every time the father took a bite of that, he realized the son wasn't interested in feeding him. He was doing it because he had to, and it made the father feel really lonely to enjoy what the son didn't want to do. So even though the son was giving him very expensive things, that wasn't covered. The other example is, there was a father and son who lived together, and the son supported his father. And then the father got a notice to come and work in the king's army. And the son knew that the father wouldn't be able to do that. But the son said, you know, I'm going to go and take your place in the king's army, but somebody has to work and support us. So you go and take my job in the mill, and I will go in your place and work in the king's army, which is impossible for you. The son did that out of respect for his father, even though he sent his father to the mill to work, because otherwise they would starve with him. So you can force your father to work in a mill, but you do it out of respect, because you consider your father important. That's kibbutz. And you can feed him pheasant, but the idea behind it does not mean that you think your father's important, just the opposite. But that's not covered. What does it mean for a husband to honor his wife more than himself? What it means basically is, honor means I consider you important. I consider you an important person, and therefore I consider what you do important. They say that, I think it was Yosef Salander, or maybe it was probably Amstutz, but probably Moshe, after he got married, would come home Friday night, stand at the door, and gaze at the Shabbos table and the house that was in order for quite a few minutes to show his wife that he appreciated what she did. That's covet. Covet means what's important to you is important to me. And men and women are very different. Maybe I'm different out of my experience. Maybe I'm different than everybody. I don't know. But it would seem to me that most men are similar to me in this respect. My wife comes to me, and she says, why don't we paint the living room? What's wrong with it now? Well, we're getting tired of the color it is now. We need a new spirit in the house. Why don't we paint the living room? Okay. What color shows me a million different colors? They all look the same, right? What exactly is the difference between this off-white, off-off-white? So, which one do you think tell you the truth, I really couldn't care. As long as there's walls there, I really don't care what color they are all together. Doesn't make that much of a difference to me, but it makes a difference to her. So if I make nothing of it, that means I don't respect her. Because if she's important, then what she considers important, it should be important to me. So I should not pretend that I'm interested, but I should be interested. If that's what's important to you, and it's important to you to ask me, which I never understood, because no matter what I say, she does what she wants anyway. What'd you ask me for? But if that's important to her, to be able to ask me and do what she wants, then that's also part of what COVID is. COVID is considering the other person important, and therefore what they consider important, what they do is important. I consider what you spend your time the whole day doing must be important because you're an important person. And if I make little of it, and I make nothing of it, that means that you're not important because you're involved in unimportant things. So a husband has to respect his wife more than himself. But for himself, he wouldn't consider it important at all. Doesn't make an impact on him. Doesn't care. But if his wife thinks it's important, then for her, he has to give her that respect of considering what she considers important for him. That is, I don't know why I'm facing over here. Second thing is, should love her like he loves himself, like his body. A person realizes that his wife provides for him a physical environment, prepares the house for him, and food, or whatever it may be. Sometimes she shares in earning the money in the house. And just as much as the person loves himself, he has to feel that his wife is a partner. Love really is based on an affinity, a commonality. It's interesting. The Torah did not make it a mitzvah to love your parents, nor to love your spouse. There was no mitzvah in the Torah to love your spouse. The Rambam says, it's a mitzvah the Rambam. The rabbis commanded a husband to love his wife. And it doesn't even say the wife has to love her husband. Just the husband has to love his wife, because K'mayim Panim Alpanim, the husband loves his wife, and she'll love him. So it's automatic. But there's no chiyuv on the woman to love her husband, there's a chiyuv on the husband to see to it that he loves his wife. Now, there's no mitzvah in the Torah, there's no mitzvah in the Torah to love your parents. You know what there is a mitzvah to love? Every fellow Jew, you have to re'ach kamocha. A ger, a convert you have to love, and God you have to love. Otherwise, there is mitzvah, the Rambam says, to respect your parents, to listen to a Navi. You don't have to love a Navi. You don't have to love your parents. You don't have to love your spouse. Why? So some people say, well, because it's not necessary to have a mitzvah. Everybody loves their parents. Everybody loves their spouse. So that person obviously has never really been exposed to the world. Because I know a lot of people, as a rabbi, who don't love their parents or who don't love their spouse. And therefore, you do need a mitzvah to love your parents and to love your spouse. So that's not the reason. So what is the reason? I think the reason is the Torah can't command you to create a commonality that may not exist. You may have nothing in common with your parents, not even physically. They brought you into this world, but genetically you're a throwback to two generations. You have red hair, your parents both have black hair. Right, you have blue eyes, they have black eyes. They don't even look like that. Most certainly, people don't necessarily think like their parents. Politically, socially, Torah-wise, you're completely different than your parents. So there may not be any commonality. So Torah couldn't command you, create a commonality. It's for sure part of Kibbutz Avraham to try to have something in common with your parents, to love them. But the Torah couldn't command you to do something that may not exist. You may have nothing in common with your spouse, except the fact that she may have had $1 million in her bank account when you met her. And that induced you to, or there was a shotgun involved that brought you to the hook. That's also possible. So you may have nothing in common with your spouse, and therefore the Torah couldn't command you to create it. You do have something in common with your neighbor, Jewish neighbor. You both have the same responsibility, the same mitzvahs. Yohacha, Re'acha, Kamocha, Re'acha, the Torah mitzvahs. That's what you have to love. You don't have to love your neighbor for who they are. You have to love them for what they are. they may really bug you and rub you the wrong way, and you don't like their personality, but you have to love about them that they're Jews, that they share the same Torah and mitzvahs. That's all. Same thing with the Ger. They chose to be one of you. And God, because we're all created in God's image, so we do have something in common. So, and even though a person has to love his spouse because they are either Galen or Jewish, one of the two, right? So you have to love them, but I'm sure my wife would not be overjoyed if I told her, yes, I love you like I love the guy next door. But there's no specific mitzvah to love a spouse. So what does it mean that the rabbi said, love your spouse? They meant that you should create that affinity, that commonality. Work on having things in common. Work on feeling something in common. And then the love will come. And if the love comes from this side, it'll come from the other side. And the Milcham Eliyahu says the famous thing that everybody knows, that love comes from giving. The more you give, the more you create love. And therefore, everybody should be a giver, and people should not be takers. There's only one problem with that. If we all fulfill that, and we're all givers, who's going to be taking what we're giving? So we won't be able to be givers unless we get one token taker to take whatever we're giving. The answer to that is that giving and taking is not always determined by who is handing over and who's receiving. Sometimes you can receive and be a giver, and sometimes you can hand over and be a taker. A few short examples, and I'll get to the point I want to make, which is extremely important, especially for women. Let's take a case where a person can look like he's giving, but he's really taking. You go to visit somebody in the hospital. Now, being in the hospital means that it's very hard to get to sleep, because usually you're sick if you're in the hospital. Even if you give birth, right, it's hard to get to sleep. Aside from the fact that, from my experience, when you finally get to sleep in the hospital, they wake you up to take sleep again. So, it's very hard to get to sleep. So you go to visit somebody in the hospital, you want them to kind of mitzvah bikur holy. And you find the person's asleep. What a chutzpah. I mean, I came to be doing mitzvah. You're asleep? What kind of mitzvah do I have? You're asleep. So if I am refined, I send the nurse in to see if they're really asleep, meaning wake them up, I'm here. If I'm not so refined, I walk into the room, knock over a chair, make a tremendous amount of noise. The person wakes up and says, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to wake you. Of course you didn't wake up. Now I'm here, I got my mitzvah fine. What does it look like? It looks like the person who's sick is the receiver, and you're the giver. You're giving them chesed, a bigger holy. What's really the truth? The person who's sick is the giver. He's giving you the opportunity to do a mitzvah. You're using him to get a mitzvah. Because if you really wanted to do the mitzvah for his sake, you'd let him sleep. Put a note, come back some other time. So sometimes you can look like you are giving when you're really the taker. The opposite is also true. A person can take, but he takes in order to give. I remember the Al-Kasach Merebi of Yoel. I grew up in Miami, and he used to spend his winters in Miami. So as a teenager, I went and observed him somehow. He had a robe, a very colorful robe that he wore, which had gigantic pockets in the front, and they were full of money. $100, not $1 bills. $100 bills, bulging from the pockets. I remember saying to myself, when I grew up on Diorev, this is a real this is the way to do it. He just sits there, people just give him $100 bills. And then I saw people come, poor people, cry their hearts out to him, put his hand in his pocket, didn't even look to see what he was taking, took a handful, gave it to the person. Another handful to this person, then he had empty pockets. Then some rich people came, and the pockets filled up again. Can you say he was a taker? He wasn't a taker, he was a clearinghouse. He took in order to be able to give. He never wanted to give his own. But people wanted to give him for brothers, for whatever, and that way he had the ability to give to others. So he took what rightfully was coming to him, and he gave it. It wasn't robbing, he wasn't stealing from the rich. He was taking from the rich what they wanted to give him. So that's one way you can take in order to give. That's called giving. Another way is you can take to honor somebody else. So Somebody, when I first became a rabbi many years ago, and I decided that I was going to be a tzaddik. I would accept presents from no one. I got a salary, and I could live on that, and I don't need anything, and I wasn't going to take money for selling chametz, and I wasn't going to take presents if people went out to Israel and came back to Miami and wanted to give the rabbi a present, or they wanted to give me a present for poor. I wouldn't take any presents. So many of my chametz did. This went on for a few weeks, and I refused a few presents until one of my elderly balabatim came to me. And he said, Rabbi, I must speak to you, and you'll forgive me if I'm a little blunt, but I got to tell you something. He said, you think you're a big tzaddik that you don't take presents from these people. You are insulting them. They come back from Eretz Israel. They want the covet of the rabbi taking their present. You're telling them that their present is worth anything to you. Take it. You want to put it away, give it to somebody else. That's your business. But give them the honor of taking it. And even if you convince me too much, from then on I can press. He's right. Sometimes you have to be mechaved other people by taking what they want to give. And even though it looks like you're the taker, you're really giving that person honor. You're giving them the honor of taking something from them that they want to give you. And not rejecting it and saying, what you have to give is not important. And the last thing is the really most important one, and this is what women should listen to. Because it usually doesn't apply to them. Another possibility of how taking can be giving, in every relationship, there's the giver and the taker. If one side of the relationship always wants to be the giver and never the taker, and usually that is called the Jewish woman, Jewish mother, Jewish wife, never wants to be a taker. She always wants to be a martyr, a giver. Right? Husband and wife and one little child are sitting by the table, and they bring a ton of food to the table. What's the wife say? Oh, no, I can't eat. Right? Give it to my child. What do you give it to your child? Give it to an army. Right? If you eat, your child is not going to suffer. No, no, no. Let the child have it. A woman, a Jewish woman, loves to be a martyr. She loves always to be the giver and never to be the taker. That's very, very nice, but it's not so nice. You know why? Because if you're always the giver in a relationship and never a taker, you don't offer the other person to ever be a giver, which is very demeaning. Sometimes you have to take in order to enable somebody else to give. You can't always be a martyr. Sometimes you have to take, even if you're not interested in taking. But I want to give you the respect of being able to be a giver and not always on the receiving end. Sometimes you have to be willing to take to do that. That's also called giving. You're giving the other person the opportunity to give. So that is, even though love is based on giving, but giving is not always who hands out. Giving can come in many, many ways, and sometimes giving is taken. And that creates love. A woman, husband should give his wife and honor her financially, and the greatest honor is to give her independence. But she shouldn't be dependent on her husband for every little thing. But she has the independence to be able to deal with the money that he has as if it's hers. Not that she has to come for every little thing to her husband and feel demeaning that he's in control. So when it says that he should treat her respectfully, money-wise, part of that means he should give her independence when it comes to money and let her enjoy the level of financial security that he can offer her in a way that's not demeaning. Lo yatu eima yisela, he shouldn't intimidate her. Let me tell you a story, a true story. A woman once came to me, I said to make tshuva, and she wanted to know how she should do tshuva for the following sin that she almost committed. She told me the following, that one Friday evening, the gas went out on her chalet, which was on a glass on the oven, and the gas went out. And she already imagine in her mind what her husband is going to do when he comes home and finds out he's not going to have chalent. Because there was no other, how to get that Sheldon made. And it wasn't there, and it was Friday night. There was no other house to put it on or where else to put it. It was either one of two things. Either she would be Mechallel Shabbos and put on the gas again, and nobody would know except for God, and her husband would have his children. Or she would face her husband's anger and wrath for an entire Shabbos because she let the gas go out and the children wasn't there. Her initial feeling was, God is much more merciful than my husband, and I would rather face him after 120 years than face my husband now. And she thought of lighting the gas. Nobody would know except her and God. And then she said, no, I can't do it. And she didn't light the gas, and she faced her husband. I didn't ask her exactly what happened, but that was the shaila. She wanted to know how to do tshuva for almost being Mechallel Shabbos. I told her, you didn't do anything, but I want to speak to your husband. I called the husband in, and I told him this story. And I told him, if you ever intimidate your wife again, then it's not God you're going to have to put up with, it's me you're going to have to put up with. And I am a lot less merciful than God. Your wife didn't do enough. You better, before Yom Kippur, do tshuva for what you intimidated her to almost be a chal shabbos. This is Gemara. But the Gemara is like theoretical. This real. This happened. So that's what it means. A husband should not intimidate his wife. Doesn't only mean you shouldn't yell at her or whatever. It means that the wife shouldn't have such fear of doing something that will make her husband angry that has to show him she could do terrible things because of that intimidation. And he should speak, but not us. And he shouldn't be agitated or depressed. Something else that her husband shouldn't do. He shouldn't tell his wife everything that happens to him during the day. Even though the women say, well, but you know, we have to share everything, and my husband shouldn't hold anything from me. Let me tell you that that is a terrible thing if you take it to the extreme. Why? A husband, you know, people call him an idiot, or they argue with him, or whatever, and if he comes home to his wife and tells every little spat that he had with somebody, every argument, every person who called him an idiot, so first of all, it happens often. Eventually, he tells his wife every day, this guy called me an idiot today, this guy called me an idiot yesterday, so I just say, you know what? Everybody can't be wrong. So, it's not in the husband's best interest to reveal, divulge that information. But in addition to that, women, a good wife, usually champions her husband's honor a lot more than he does. Tomorrow we'll go back to work, and they'll forget about it, and they'll get back to the friend, and they'll forget about it, and it'll be gone. But when a wife hears, this one said this to my husband, this one did this to my husband, she doesn't forget. She makes a mountain out of the molehill, a covenant for her husband, and she doesn't let her husband forget. And that's the way that there's constant machlokas that plagues the home. If the husband doesn't divulge it to his wife, he'll forget about it, and everything will be fine. Sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes very serious. And you need the other side. The wife has to comfort her husband and calm him down. So he has to tell her because it's something very serious and he needs to be calmed down. He needs, and then the wife has to be like the wife of Om Ben Peles who saves her husband from Machlokas and not like the wife of Korach who brought him into Machlokas. So that is the husband's responsibility. How about a woman? Chabedes is Baila Yosher Midah. She should honor her husband more than enough. What does that mean more? How much is enough and how much is more than enough? What I understand it to mean is the following. A husband gets respect on the outside. Sometimes the respect he gets on the outside is more than the respect he gets at home. Because his wife knows him better than the people on the outside. She really knows him. People there don't know him so much. So, you know, it looks good on the outside, al chesed, whatever, he doesn't do anything in favor for his children, for his wife, or whatever. Not just a big al chesed in the house. So, on the outside, the man gets a lot of respect, and in the home, his wife says, you know, he doesn't really deserve all that respect. I know him. Sometimes the opposite. The wife really appreciates her husband, she sees his mileage. But on the outside, not too many people see that, and they don't give them respect. A woman has to respect her husband, Yosef Idai, more than she sees and more than they see on the outside. If what she sees is not as much on the outside, she's respecting the way they do on the outside. If what she sees is more than on the outside, she should respect him more than he gets on the outside of what she sees. Always Yosef Idai, more than he gets in either of the venues where it's less. That's the way I understand. Another thing is, kol ta'aseh kol ma'aseh al pi'ah. She should do everything that her husband wants. That is absurd. That's not what it means. No one ever thinks that Asher Kenegdo means that whatever the husband wants to do, the wife should agree. Because a wife was made to help her husband, not her. And if he wants to do things that are wrong, if he wants to do things that are right, then be an Asher. Help him do it. If he wants to do things that are wrong, then be Kenegdo. Be against him. In both cases, you're helping him. Sometimes you're helping him do what's right, and sometimes you're helping him by not letting him do what's wrong. So, what does it mean then? Osa kol ma'aseh al pi'ah? There's a Rashi in Ksubas that the olam teidaito shalom uremus, a person should always be sociable. That's the meaning of the Gemara. Rashi says, la'asos kirtzon ish v'ish, to do whatever anybody wants. Now that is ridiculous. First of all, a lot of people want different things. You can't do what everybody wants. Because if you do what this one wants, this one doesn't want it. You do this. How do you do lasos to its own ish for ish? So I think the Tells of Rosh Hashiva, with that Yemei of Law, said the following. What does it mean? What it means is the following. When somebody says to you, do you think you can do this for me? Your reaction should be, why not? And then think and see, maybe not go. There's a reason, why not? But your first reaction should be, why not? Many people, when they hear somebody ask them, can you do this for me, their first reaction is, no. And then I'll think about it. Your attitude has to be, I want to do whatever you want. But then that's my first reaction, and then I have to think about it. Can I? Should I? Or whatever. But my initial reaction is, why not? Not why yes. That's what it means. A woman should have the desire to do what her husband wants. That's the initial desire. After that, she has to come to a realization whether it's in fact proper to do or not proper to do, and what's really best for him. And sometimes going against him and preventing him from doing what he wants to do is what's right. It says, Isha Tova, Osher Ritzon Bayla. Doesn't say Mekayim Ritzon Bayla. A good woman doesn't fulfill her husband's will. She makes her husband's will. She guides what he should want. And then he thinks it's what he wants. Really, it's what she created, that will. So a woman has to, on the surface, want to do whatever her husband wants. But she can never chas v'sholom do whatever her husband wants. She has to then make a cheshbon and decide. If she can't decide, she has to get from somebody else or go to a rav or whatever, or a friend, or and find out if this is proper or it's not proper. And if it's not proper, then I'm going to see to it that my husband wants something different. And I'm going to be smart enough to do it in a way that doesn't destroy Shalom Bayit. And I'm going to do it in a way that if I have to oppose him, he's going to know I'm opposing him because it's for his good. Not because my desire is, because that's what's good for him. And it says that when it comes to what to do with the family, so one place the Gemara says, Hashomeya ba'as asishto nofel b'gehenem. A person who listens to his wife's advice is going to fall into Gehenna. Another place the Gemara says, if your wife's a midget, bend down and listen carefully to everything she says and do what she says. So which is supposed to listen to your wife, not listen to your wife? So the Gemara says, it depends. Mila di alma, in material things, seemingly, they are the wife. What color paint in the living room, where to put the sofa, the wife should be the one to decide. Where you send your kids to school, the husband should decide. Mila Ishmael. It's not so simple. Because the Gemara says that the Elazar ben Azariah, who they offered to be the Nazi when he was 18 years old. And Shidim Shana, like he was 70. So they offered him to be the Nazi, and he said, I got to go home and ask my wife. The horror of being the Nazi was not Milei the Alma, it was Milei the Shemaya. Why did he ask his wife? Milei the Shemaya means theoretical things. Milei the Alma means practical things, even spiritual. You want to know what you send your kids? Ask the wife. You want to know what theoretically is a nice hashkafa to have as a husband? Husband has theoretical knowledge. A wife has lamaisa, common sense. She knows how to apply the things to the real world. Now, that doesn't mean that a wife should make all the decisions in one area and a husband in another area. Sorry. What it means is they should discuss it between themselves. They should come to a common ground. That's the idea. But what happens sometimes you can't come to common ground. And each one really feels that they're right. So then, you either have to find somebody to go to and present both sides, and somebody objective who has some kind of Torah knowledge to know what's right and what's wrong can give you advice. And even if that doesn't work, then for lack of any other way of solving, because you have to do something, you can't just leave it and not do anything, you have to come to a decision, then a wife should have a final word in Milei the Alma and a husband in Milei the Shemaya. That's the last resort. All the other resorts are work it out between yourself, ask advice from somebody, and accept that advice. And if none of that works, then delegate that in certain kinds of things, the wife will make the final decision, and certain kinds of things, the husband will make the final decision. They tell me when to stop. Because of real Shalom Bayis problem, I can't do here. Or I may be solving about Shalom Bayis problem. Another one or two things. Some very general things. And again, how they apply applies in each situation differently. But the general things are usually generally positive. One is not to make everything that happens an issue. Know how to choose your battles. That's for sure with children also. Not everything is a principle. There are principles in this world. I once saw in Leader's Digest. So when somebody says it's the principle and not the money, usually it's the money. Not everything's a principle. Not everything you have to make a big deal about. A person can look the other way and not make a battle over something. Sometimes things are principles and you have to make a battle over them. Not everything. And a person should realize that in this world, there is an upside and a downside in everything. Even in positive things, there's a downside. And in negative things, there's an upside. And they take everything into consideration to decide, is it worth making a fight over this or not? And sometimes what I will lose by not making a fight is much more of a gain than what I'm going to lose by making a fight. So that's something a person should keep into perspective. Another thing, dolakatsos, that does not only apply to strangers, it applies to your spouse too. Remember, the Gemara gives an example of how important it is to be done with katzkos, of students being done their rebbe with katzkos. It always bothered me. What's the proof? Of course students are done their rebbe with katzkos, but what proof is there from the fact that students have to give their rebbe a benefit of the doubt, that some people have to give other people a benefit of the doubt? That question stopped bothering me when it came to Rabbi. No question anymore. The last person in the world you give the benefit of the doubt, your rebbe. The last person you give the benefit of the doubt is your spouse. It's the people closest to you that you don't, are not gone to consequences. Strangers, it's easier to be gone to consequences with strangers. But my wife said something, she meant it with spite, and therefore I'm going to hold it against her the rest of her life. Maybe she didn't mean it in spite. Maybe she said it and she didn't really mean it. But there was reasons why she said it. She was tired or whatever. The same thing the opposite way. Don't always assume that something was done on purpose with malice when maybe there are extenuating circumstances, a way of being done with katzkos. And if you look for that benefit of the doubt, then many times things that could really explode into terrible shalom bayis issues will be avoided because each one gives the other one benefit of the doubt. Another thing that's very important in a relationship, akara sakara, recognize the good. And recognize good doesn't mean only the great things that people do for each other. The small things. If you get into the habit of recognizing small good, then you'll always be recognizing the good. You'll always be grateful. And even if there are things that are negative, but the gratefulness, that feeling of gratitude will overpower them. Aktivetah, February, Baleatosis, says that if you have an animal that was attacked by a wolf, and they dug its claws into it, they put a hole in its lung. So that's a trait. That animal you're not allowed to eat. Okay, even if you shaft it, you're not allowed to eat it. It's trait. Trait. That's a real trait. So what do you do with a trait? The Torah says what to do with it. Give it to the dog. Just throw it to the dog. So you all know the Medrash that the dogs kept quiet by the tribe, and that's why they got this reward. But what's a simple meaning? It says the Bali Atosha, the simple meaning is the following. Usually, dogs protect the herd. You have a sheep dog that protects the herd. This dog, right, protected the herd, did a nice job, and now you have a sheep from that herd that you can't eat because it was mauled by a lion, a tiger, or a wolf, whatever. So give the dog, show some gratitude, give the dog the sheep that you can't eat as gratitude. Says the Balei Tosfos, only one problem. You know why he can't eat that sheep? Because the dog didn't do his job. Because had he protected the flock properly, that wolf wouldn't have gotten in. So why is that animal trait and you can't eat it? Because the dog was feral. And the animal was harmed. Says the Balei Tosfos, okay. So the dog didn't do his job once. It doesn't erase all the times he did do his job. So still, show him gratitude. That's how you're supposed to treat a dog. How do we treat people? We have people that did us favors over years, and then they once did something not nice to us. What do we usually do? Wipe them out of our book. That's it. They're finished. All the good they did for you over years, it erases one bad thing, erases everything. It doesn't do that for a dog. And with spouses, for sure. Right? A wife can do so many good things for her husband. And one thing doesn't like, it erases everything. Same thing, the opposite. That's not the way you treat a dog. Surely not the way you treat a human being. Surely not your spouse. So, Hakaras HaTov is not what you do for me recently, but remembering the past too, even if right now the present isn't to your life. The, after all is said and done, a person has to daven for Shalom Bayis. You can do everything right. You can have a perfect Shalom Bayis and it won't impact on your children, and you can do everything right and it won't be Shalom Bayis. People have free choice. They're not robots and they're not machines. You can't program anybody. So you can listen to everything I said. It doesn't work and it doesn't impact on your children either. But that's something that you have to ask to see after the Shemayim. Even that is not guaranteed. There's no guarantees in this world. But you have to do what you know is the right thing to do, and hope that the Rebbe will help you, and it'll work out. And if the Rebbe has other plans, that's his business. That's beyond our comprehension. But in any case, the Ikar Tefillah is not an eventually, or when you say Shemona Esrei, that's very fine Tefillah. But the Ikar Tefillah is what's called Ba'anis Tefillah. The Chafetz Chaim explains it the following way. So if somebody comes from an organization, they come from Hakshiva, and they want to come to your home and convince you to give a monthly contribution to Hakshiva, which I suggested to you. So comes with his attaché case, nice dress, suit, and tie, and you say to him, what can I do for you? So opens his attaché case, takes out all his information, shows you a video, whatever, and then makes his pitch, and you either respond or don't. What happens though if somebody who hasn't eaten for 3 days is dressed in tattered rags, comes to your door, he's groveling on the floor with his tongue stuck out, you open the door, you don't say, excuse me, sir, what can I do for you? And you don't expect him to take out an attaché case and show you what poverty is and hunger. Look at him. You don't have to ask him a thing. He doesn't have to pitch anything to you. Just look at the guy. You know what you have to do. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's what David HaMelech said. Va'ani stil ha'sim, the Rebbe Shalom, I don't have to open my mouth. Look at me. You'll see what I want. You'll see what my desires are in this world. You'll see what's important to me. Just look at me. Look at the way I behave. What I do, what's important to me. That I am my tefillah. That's the greatest tefillah. That a husband should see from everything his wife does that her greatest nachas is that her husband should be successful. And a wife should see from the way her husband behaves that his greatest tefillah, his greatest desire is his wife should be successful. And children should see that the greatest hope and desire that a parent has is that they should be successful. They should be b'nei Torah and widows Torah. That's what a successful life is. More than all the tefillahs you can say, if you represent and they can see on you what it is that you're dominating for, what it is you want, then that makes an impression, one on the other and on the rest of the family also. And Yitz Hashem, if we take to heart and put some effort into it, not going to happen by osmosis. Eish Yisrael Niyimtzah, Rabos Bonos Osukhoi. You can't do it easy, and it doesn't happen fast. It takes a lot of time, and a lot of effort, and Sheva Yipol Tzadik will come, a lot of failures, and learning from those failures, and doing it right the next time, and the next time, and the Yitzhak Hashem were willing to put the commitment, and not to take the easy way out. We feel boxed in on all four sides, and we have to fight, and not run away, then the Yitzhak Hashem will have successful marriages, happy marriages, and that will ultimately have an impact on our children. We'll see happy, successful, respectful parents, and then they will feel that they have to be happy, successful, and respectful children. And then we'll see, Shalom Ad Yisrael, we'll see Taka bringing the generation that will greet the name of Shia.